When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
Joe, we are back in Newport Beach, and let's just get to it, man. This episode is called The Cliffhanger. It's from season 3, episode 14, and I'm going to jump to my last note.
Stop it.
For reasons. And I just wrote, Jesus Christ, is this how they kill Johnny? ! And I guess I won't know until next week, because this is, of course, The Cliffhanger. But I don't foresee a world where Johnny survives what happened at the start of this episode or at the end of this episode. So let's dive into it. The Seth Cohen pothead plotline continues. We find Ryan visiting Seth at the pier, see what's going on. To which I do like this line from Seth. He goes, "What, are you the only one in this family that's allowed to brood?"
yeah, that was good.
And then Ryan's like, "So you're not smoking pot anymore?" And he's like, "No, of course not." He's like, "You're definitely not down here on the pier trying to find someone to sell you pot." And then,
because you know they're mostly cops.
Yeah, so it's just like, "Well, I was gonna quit." Yeah, that's fine. And he walks home with Seth. Do 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 do. California, here we come. I wrote a very sarcastic note, and I just said, man, I'm really stoked that I get to see more episodes with Caitlin. It's like all my least favorite traits from Marissa over three seasons smashed into a singular human being.
Well, and that is also interesting, because in an earlier episode this season, Julie, I think, is talking to Kirsten, where it's like, you know, yeah, Marissa's like Jimmy, but Caitlin's all me. I'm like, no wonder we fucking hate her. You fucking hate her, because she's the worst, like the most basic and like primal parts of Julie Cooper, unfiltered by like adulthood and perspective.
Yeah, she is a just human nightmare throughout most of these two episodes that we watched for this. And this one, I mean, the fact that I lose a little respect for Ryan, honestly, the fact that Ryan buys into this bullshit, even if Marissa was like, here's the thing. Yes, maybe Marissa has some type of feelings for Johnny. A, nothing wrong with that. B, she's not acting on any of them. C, she's chosen Ryan time and time again. So like Caitlin, like doing this thing, like it shouldn't have any effect on it. Like,
sure.
So this is like an outrageous version of it, right? But there's an Adam Sandler song that's called "She Comes Home to Me." And the whole point of the song is that he's dating a very high end prostitute. And it's like basically him just saying like, yeah, she might have sucked your dick and, you know, fucked you and five guys at one time, but she comes home to me, baby. Like, she's made her choice. I'm not saying that that's Marissa, but my point being, like, Ryan has won. Like, Ryan has won time and time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why, like, Caitlin being like, Marissa seems mighty mad that I'm making out with Johnny. That must mean something. Like, that should have so little effect. And also, like, he's correctly called out multiple times. You're just trying to stir the pot. You're just trying to hurt Marissa. Like, the fact that he gives in makes me very frustrated with Ryan as a character.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, right, is that, like, this is just Ryan. Ryan, the insecurity also comes from, like, a real place, because this is Marissa's patterns.
Yep.
Marissa's not, it's not like she hasn't done this before. And, like, I feel like this is all, do you know what the word compersion means?
No. Please define okay, it for me. So, we're going to be educational this week.
All the, like, all the queers who, all queer people who know that word just rolled their eyes at me for saying it. But the word compersion is something that you hear often in, like, ethical non-monogamy. Okay. Open relationships, where it's the feeling of having, like, of taking pleasure in your partner also receiving pleasure, whether and not having it, like, and it's not from you, but, like, you can
remove yourself from it, basically.
You can remove yourself from it, but you're,
is
it, well,
is the word so is the word almost inspired by
compartmentalizing?
Yes. Is that, like, kind of the root of it?
No, because, like, in compartmentalization, right, you're not really addressing it. You're, like, putting it down. Whereas compersion, you're, like, actively engaged, and you're talking. There's a communication component, right? Okay. And so, like, one of the things about people who are into, like, who practice ethical non-monogamy is this idea that, like, in the literature, but mostly the ethical slut, but in the literature, they say that, like, you partners have to practice compersion. Like, that's one of the ways, compersion, and which comes with open communication. And I feel like, again, this is, like, not just a white, interestingly, uniquely, like, a cis straight problem, not just a white people problem, is this idea that, like, so what, like, for me, it's also, like, so what that Marissa has a crush or has feelings for Johnny and she's with, like, Ryan. It's like the entire show, this entire plotline would mean nothing if we lived in a world where, like, ethical non-monogamy and polyamory were more widely accepted. Right. And you would have to find the drama elsewhere.
Even without that, it's like, so what? She has a crush that she has made no action towards whatsoever.
Yeah. Some people have crushes also on, like, celebrities and people they'll never meet. And some people have crushes on people that they see every fucking day.
And also, I know that's, by definition, a crush typically means that you know that they're off. Like, mm-hmm. like a crush, I think, by, like, a Webster's dictionary, is, like, a fleeting feeling of attraction towards someone unattainable, basically. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like she knows A, that Johnny's not for her. Like, mm-hmm. he's not someone that she wants. And mm-hmm. B, it's a fleeting feeling. It's not like she's going to be sitting there being like, oh, but if only I was with Johnny. But, like, Johnny's also not wrong. Yeah. He's like, look, I've pushed you away 7 different times, but your desire to be loved, you kept coming back regardless. And that's a Marissa problem. Marissa.
Yeah.
I mean, I made that joke 5 episodes ago when I said, like, God forbid Marissa accepts that sometimes friendships fizzle out. She's, like, mm-hmm. putting in all this extra work to, like, win over a person who's like, we have nothing in common.
Yeah.
Like, which, by the end of this episode, I thought, man, if I was Chili, I would fucking hate Marissa Cooper at this point.
Because, oh, yeah.
Because it's like, you just, like, rolled in his girlfriend that she split them apart, caused a rift between. She's just been MIA ever since. Yeah. Like, stopped going to school and everything. And then Johnny fucking falls off a cliff after getting hit by a car because of Marissa. Like, Chili must be like, you are the worst. You are a succubus of.
You are the devil.
Yeah, like, you are the worst thing that has ever happened to me. It's all so frustrating. It's, and, like, Johnny finally tells Marissa that he loves her, which pissed me off. But I also respect that he then goes and just tells Ryan, like, I tried not to. I told her. I feel like you deserve to know that I told her.
And why? Why did he deserve to know?
Yeah.
Right? Well, and to me, that's like mind games and conniving shit, right? Because that's going to drive the wedge between them because he knows how jealous Ryan can get.
Well, at the end of the day, this episode is about a character named Johnny who looks like Johnny, but nothing about this character represents the Johnny that we've seen for 12 episodes. Like, okay. In any way. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, none of this makes sense. This is such a, like, gigantic leap in another direction where it's like, this dude was cheated on, didn't bum him out that much. Like,
yeah.
He got into fucking fights with Volchek, didn't bum him out. Like, got hit by a car and is like trying to like rehab himself back into surfing. Like, he still kept an optimistic view. Tells a girl who's already in a very long-term committed relationship that he's interested in her. And she says no. And that fucks him up so badly that he chugs bottles of vodka by a fire and climbs up a cliff to fall to his death. Like, that's just not, that is not the Johnny character at all as it's been established in this show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the thing over and over and over again. Whenever this show goes for drama, it frustrates me because it goes for, like, the cheap drama and not, like, an authentic to the character drama. Like, if your character development isn't going to matter, then, like, let's just make this an anthology series about dramatic shit happening to teenagers every week. Because there's no benefit in knowing the long-term history of any of these characters if you're just going to fucking change everything about them to retrofit into whatever dramatic storyline you've concocted. Like, it's very frustrating.
Yeah. A couple things. One, the thing about the Johnny stuff is that the Johnny stuff actually in the larger narrative of Marissa is like completely spot on. Like, you don't get Johnny if you don't have Oliver, right?
Yeah.
This is a complete callback to the first season. They attempted to do something similar with in the second season with Trey, right? Like, she's being nice to Trey. She's getting attention from another sad little puppy dog that she needs to take care of. And then it doesn't end well for Trey. Trey lives, but, like, doesn't end well for Trey.
But also, you know what? Flip side of that is, like, Marissa, didn't you fucking learn your lesson with Oliver and Trey? Like, I feel like if you're being authentic to that character, she should not trust anybody ever again. What happened to the Marissa from 7 episodes that couldn't even sit down and write a paper about her trauma? Like, it's all gone now. Like, it's just like that's the stuff that gets me so frustrated, because it's like the pieces don't fall in. Also, side note, Caitlin put so little effort into trying to get Johnny down from those cliffs. It was actually infuriating.
Yeah, like, she's like, no, stop.
No, don't do that. Please.
Don't do that. No. Like, don't go up there. Johnny, what are you doing? She could have actually gone up there, but you know.
She could have gone up there. She could have called the police. She could have called Ryan and Marissa.
She called Ryan and Marissa.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marissa, but I'm scared. Help. No.
Is this gonna turn into like, oh god damn it, is the next couple episodes going to be Ryan push Johnny plot, like, that people don't believe that he tried to stop this?
Oh my god, I don't remember
because that seems like the OC to me, baby. Like,
you gotta also give it up to, like, the only sisterly moment between them is when, like, Marissa holds her and tells her and forces her to look away when Johnny falls.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most, I'm like, oh, they are sisters. They do care about each other.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps.
Woo!
Thank you. 91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
I don't think I understand how far the beach is from the Coen's house in actuality, because, like, that wouldn't be the first people I'd call. I don't know. Like, how long is he climbing this fucking cliff before they get there? Like, is it a 10-minute drive? Is it a 15-minute drive?
Like, where are they that they're be able to do this?
Yeah. Like, I'd love to imagine the world where she calls and it's like 45 minutes that we don't see of Johnny slowly climbing this cliff to finally get to the top just in time for Ryan to run up the other side and get him try to get him down. Yeah. Let's talk about the one beacon of positivity and goodness in this episode, which is, I'm shocked again to say it, the Julie Cooper story of her trying to win Summer's husband, dear God, Summer's dad back. Just like the like trying to set him up on a date to try to make him realize how much better he's better off he is. Her fighting with Kirsten about the plan when it doesn't go well. And then the quote that you and I both texted me one half of the quote, and I wrote the other half of the quote in my notes. Because he comes to her trailer park. Julie Cooper opens the door. And what does Julie Cooper say to him, Joe? This is the one you texted me.
Oh, she says, hold on, I have to pull up the text. She says, now, if you excuse me, I have a hot pocket in the microwave and a wine cooler with my name on it.
And then he kind of sweet talks his way into staying there, and she goes, well, this is your lucky night. I've got an extra hot pocket. Which I just love. I actually really like this relationship, and I hope against hope that this one sticks, that Julie Cooper is finally able to keep a guy until the final episode of the OC. Who knows? And then also, real quick, the other subplot in this episode is Seth is still smoking pot. Summer finds out that he didn't go to his Brown interview. Summer mad. Seth continues to smoke pot. Like,
see, because once you pot, the fun don't stop.
Once you pot, the fun do not stop. Let's talk about the music, speaking about Seth and his pot. So the first song we hear is M. Craft, Love Knows How to Fight. This is a song that plays when Summer realizes that Seth did not, in fact, go to his interview. Because he doesn't even know the gender of the person who is doing the interview. Rock Kills Kid. Man, what an on-the-nose man name for this episode. Rock Kills Kid's song Hideaway plays when Johnny and Chili are having a conversation about if he should say something to Marissa or not. Black Flag's Waste It plays when Seth is smoking in his room just before Summer shows up and he has to quickly clear out the smoke. And then James Blunt's acoustic version of Fall at Your Feet, yet another fucking on-the-nose song, plays both when Johnny's drinking by the fire and when Ryan is unable to catch Johnny as he slips down the cliff. I went with the Black Flag song. I was actually startled that there was a Black Flag song in the OC. So that was the one that I went with. But how about you, Joe?
The last song, like, this is where this is the James Blunt motif was happening the entire episode, right? Like, you could hear, I remember when it came up the first time and I was like, is that James fucking Blunt? And I was like, oh man. But I love that the OC does that, though, where it's like, we want to emphasize this particular storyline, this particular emotional moment with a song, and then just like, we'll do it, release it until, and you kind of know at that point that it telegraphs that it's going to be the song at the end of the episode. But then it's like the juxtaposition, also like the juxtaposition of like James Blunt's music in general with like, you know, a death is really cool. But yeah, like, I loved how they did that.
All right. Well, let's do the last part of our show. We're talking about pop culture stuff. Mayan's going to be a very short one because I don't think I like this album that much. But for many, many years, one of my favorite artists was Melanie mm-hmm. Martinez. I think that her debut album, Cry Baby, is like one of the best like dark pop records mm-hmm. of the last 10 years. I really liked her second album, K through 12. Mm-hmm. And I found out that she had a third album that came out in 2023 that I really hadn't heard anything about called Portals. And I bought it without hearing a single track because I thought, man, her first two albums were great. There's no way this isn't great. And it is strictly okay. Listening to the album, my takeaway was that in the last year or so, someone has introduced Melanie Martinez to the music of Imogen Heap. And mm-hmm. she was real into those vocal effects because that's a lot of this album is like her vocals mm-hmm. super modulated and echoey. And I don't know, she's good at these concept albums. And I just don't get the concept of this one. Like K through 12, I could follow. Cry Baby, I could follow. Portals, I'm like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And I actually felt bad. My friend spent a lot of money to see Melanie Martinez live on her upcoming tour. Because mm-hmm. she loves the first two albums, and I like checked the Setlist FM and I'm like, oh, she's only playing Portals from front to back on this tour with maybe like one song in the encore. And I was like, so, you know, you better learn to love that album to get your money's worth out of this tour that you're going to, because you're not going to hear the songs that you've loved on the first two, unfortunately, which I have mixed feelings about. I think that's a very pop music thing is like sure. as soon as the new album's out, the old stuff almost ceases to exist on the following tour until you're like the retired vintage act, and then it's just the hits from all the albums. But that's my very quick pop culture promo, is just, you know, if you're a Melanie Martinez fan, you might not know that the new album's out. Give it a listen, see what you think about it. But yeah, it didn't do anything for me.
Got it. Okay. I almost chose a music thing for this one. I'm gonna go rogue. I'm gonna say that, like, I want everybody to go and listen to Jack Black sing, or Tenacious D's cover of Baby One More Time. That's apparently a part of the Panda Kung Fu Panda movie soundtrack.
Oh, I didn't know that the D did a Britney cover, and now yeah. I need to check that shit out.
Well, it also, like, I've not seen the third Kung Fu Panda, so the fact that there's a fourth one coming out that people are excited about. But the only reason why I brought that up is because I found out that there was, like, I went down a rabbit hole of Kung Fu Panda 4 because I was at the movie theater for what is my actual pick for this week, which is the new A24 film Love Lies Bleeding.
Ooh, I've been hearing that this is great.
It is so, it's good, it's like wacky, and then I was not familiar with the director. The name is familiar, the name was like known to me, and then when I looked up the movie I was like, oh, it's because this is the girl who did Saint Maud.
That makes
so
sense.
Like, so, you know, already for horror fans, if you know that name, if you know that movie title, you already know that you're in for a treat. This is, it's so well done. Like, it's not trying to be like, it's pretty like stylized, but straightforward throughout the entire thing. And then literally the last 10 minutes of the film are like, what the fuck, salad. It, like, everything leading up to it is in service of that last 10 minutes being as wild as they are. And it made me want to go home and like read every analysis, Vulture, you know, why, like, Deadline article about the end, just specifically the ending. It was also cool to, like, it reminded me of why I, one, love seeing movies that movies opening weekend are great, because a lot of people will like it fills the theater. And why I just love going to the movies for horror in general, or like horror adjacent in general, is because you can have like the sincere reaction of the audience. Like, yep. there's a scene where like we're kind of jump scared because they show like a dead body and it gets really graphic. And like there was like a half of the audience was just like, ah,
yeah.
Like, they were so, I started laughing.
Horror and comedy, I feel like, is where you get the most genuine reactions from an audience. But mm-hmm. there's also times And I only really experienced this a couple times in California more than anywhere. But like, there are times where I was in theaters in California seeing comedies where I felt like the audience was laughing more to make sure that everyone around them knew that they were enjoying the movie. Where I was like, this joke is not that good. I don't understand why you're all laughing. But yeah, those are usually the two genres where you get that, like, you don't have control of your body. When something makes you laugh, you just laugh. And when something scares you, you're scared. And it's both circumstances is like an audible thing. Like when you're watching a drama and you're being like emotionally moved, it's more of a quiet personal thing. So you don't know if the other people around you are feeling the same way. But I'm also after the opening weekend, since I have a freelance schedule, finding whatever afternoon I have free when it'll be me and like two other people in the theater so I can have some peace and quiet type viewer. But that's very high on my list to watch. So I'm definitely going to try to see that this week.
Highly recommend. It's like people are like, what is this movie about? And I'm like, oh, well, it's like revenge. I think I said it was Thelma and Louise meets Kill Bill meets like Pain and Gain, which, okay. What a callback. Pain and Gain meets like lesbian. Like,
all right. I love that description. Well, Joe, I guess next week I'll find out if Johnny's still alive or not. So stay tuned.
Don't hold your breath.
Look, there's still a chance. Trey survived. So why can't Johnny? Yeah, we'll be back for Johnny's funeral, I guess, next week on White People Problems.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.